Exciting news. Gettle is now the official HVAC partner of the Anaheim Ducks and the Honda Center. Keeping things cool on the ice and warm at home. Gettle, your trusted HVAC and plumbing partner. Visit Gettle.com/ducks for exclusive promotions. G-O-E-T-T-L. We make comfort easy to spell.
Coast to coast, nonstop action. This is the premier source for National Hockey League news, scores, highlights, and the Anaheim Ducks. It's time to light the lamp with Alexis Downey.
Excited to welcome on to Light the Lamp today in the studio here, Annie Kammons, the VP of Hockey Operations for the PWHL. Annie, awesome to have you join us. How are you doing today?
I'm great, Alexis. Thanks for having me. I'm super excited to be in California.
How was the travel here?
Easy. Yeah, brought my 12-year-old daughter, and we're going to go see family after the weekend's over, and just really excited to be back in California.
Yeah, she's joining us in the studio right now. First time for you in this professional setting, as you just said, but what do you think of the studio?
It's cool. I love the logo. The Ducks logo behind you there is classic. Pitcher Paul Kariya. It's just bringing me back to my days when I used to live out here.
Oh, when was that?
I lived in Santa Monica from... let's see, 98 to 05.
While you were with the Kings. Yep. Well, we're going to talk all about your journey, and obviously very excited to have you here this weekend for Women in Sports Night, the panel on Sunday, the whole weekend that we have planned with the Anaheim Ducks. But just talking a little bit about your journey going back, for those that don't know much about you, tell me about yourself. You grew up in Chicago.
Yes, correct. And we just had a little powwow about Chicago.
We did.
Love people that are from Chicago in the Midwest. But yeah, grew up born and raised in a suburb of Chicago way back when girls didn't really play hockey. But I was between two brothers. I am between two brothers and wanted to do whatever they did. So very much a tomboy. If they were going to skating, I wanted to go skating. And they were skateboarding, I was skateboarding. So my brothers started to play hockey. So my parents thought that they would put me in figure skating. And I'd say my first week of figure skating in the white skates, a couple boys were in my learn to skate class at the time, and they had the black skates on. And I'm like, I want to do what they do. My brothers are playing. Like, this isn't for me. I'm not into the like dress and the ice show. So I got into playing hockey when I was like six, almost seven. And my parents thought I would just kind of be bored with it after a year, and I ended up loving it. So that's how I started playing.
And then you went on to play collegiately at the University of New Hampshire. You also won a national championship, a captain, all of that. Did you envision that when you went to college that all of that would happen?
I mean, I did, but I didn't. I knew I set my sights to it. So I kind of knew that was the path I wanted to take. As soon as I started playing hockey and getting into, you know, Bantam and checking. And I'm like 5'5", 120. So as soon as the boys started to grow and checking became, you know, a thing in high school, even Bantams, but even into high school. And I couldn't physically keep up with them. I was getting hurt. And so that's when we decided to go away. I went away to prep school to play girls hockey. And at that time, that's when I started to see the college landscape. And when I was playing, there weren't a lot of Division I opportunities like there are today. There was no Wisconsin or schools, you know, Minnesota didn't have a team yet. So I kind of knew I needed to stay out east. And that's why I chose UNH. And, you know, the path for me was I want to play college hockey because one day I think I want to play pro. But as we know, there was no, you know, from 92 to 96, when I played in college, there was not that option. But I always knew when I went into UNH, that I wanted to win a national championship there. And we had won, but not in the first 3.5 years I was there. So by year four, we'd been upset my junior year and really thought we should have won and lost in, a game that we probably could have won. So I knew by senior year, I was like, I'm not going out without a national championship. And it did take us five overtimes, five 20-minute overtimes.
Oh.
So it was a long game. We were exhausted. I think it was 5 hours and 35 minutes. And we were actually on SportsCenter that night as the longest game in college hockey history. So it took us a while, but we went out on top. So that was important.
That's amazing. But I can't imagine how tired you all were after that one.
Oh, yeah. So it was funny. So we bought champagne and, you know, flowers for our coach and, you know, the whole thing. We went down in the locker room. The flowers were wilted. The champagne was warm. We're like, we don't even care. And at the time there was, I'm like totally dating myself, but there were no cell phones. So like all our parents were there, right? Mm-hmm. And they all had flights out that night because the game was like at noon. So they all had flights out that night, and they were all, you could see like up in the stands, they were all on this one payphone. Like there was a line of like 20 parents on this one payphone calling United or whatever airline they were on, like trying to cancel their flights because they were like, we're not going to make the flight. It was that, like, for some reason that sticks in my head. It was like my parents missing their flight and trying to get on the payphone in intermissions, you know? So yeah, no, it was definitely a memorable experience. And still very close to this day to my teammates.
I was going to ask what the camaraderie was like at that time, just knowing that, you know, there weren't a lot of opportunities for women to play hockey at that level, but knowing that, you know, you guys were a close group and a lot of support around each other.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And I think it was our senior year that they announced that they were going to have the Olympics in 1998. They were going to have the Women's Olympics for the first time, mm-hmm. women's ice hockey for the first time in the Olympics. And that was in Nagano, Japan. And so I think it kind of catapulted us a little bit to set our sights on, okay, instead of just graduating college and saying what's next, we kind of had a next step. So a lot of us stayed, and some of us moved to Boston and started training 96, 97. For that opportunity. And I was fortunate enough to get to the tryouts in Lake Placid in the fall of 97, and having the opportunity to try out for it. Didn't make it, but it was okay. I did the best I could do, and I was proud of that. And I had a lot of teammates that did make it, so I was super excited for them. So we did get to spend a little more time training and having that opportunity to play, and then getting to watch them win the gold medal, the first ever gold medal for Team USA, and, you know, knowing the entire team and a lot of those women that he either played with or played against to have that honor, you know, Cammy Granato and all the rest of them to have that honor to put a gold medal around their neck, I thought was super special and super important for the game of hockey.
Absolutely. For your journey then out of college and out of hockey at that point, where was your head? I mean, what were you thinking? You know, what am I going to do next? What were you thinking about your future?
Yeah, so I wasn't thinking too much about it because I was so in the zone with training, and had a great opportunity to train with Mike Boyle, who's one of the best in Boston. And so after that, I kind of knew. So my family was still in Chicago. Mm-hmm. So I kind of knew it was time to move back home. So I thought. So I basically got in the car with two other of my friends that had also not made the team. And we're like, let's just take a road trip. Again, pre-iPhones, huge map, like the size of like the whole entire driver's seat. So we're like mapping out where do we go with a, you know, a Sharpie pen, and decided, okay, let's stop through Chicago. They're from Boston area. So pick up some luggage, stop through Chicago, drop off some stuff. And we just did a road trip all the way, you know, through Utah. We had met some bobsledders when we were in Lake Placid training. So like stayed with them and hung out in Utah, and like just kind of like, this was our opportunity, 24, 25 years old, like to see the country. I'm never going to do it again. Mm-hmm. So we just got in the car and drove and went through Denver, stayed with friends. I have family out there, went to LA. At the time I had some family friends that were living in LA. So got to, you know, hang with them, drove up and down the coast, San Francisco, San Diego, like just did the whole thing in like a week or two. I don't even know how long it was. Those two women decided, one actually loved Denver, so she's to this day is still in Denver. The other one ended up going back to Boston, and I stayed in LA. Mm. And so, you know, it was just an opportunity for us to figure out what our next steps were. And my goal was to go into, I thought I was going to go into, physical therapy, you know, like go to grad school for physical therapy. And, you know, the story took a different turn when I started playing hockey at the beach to try to meet people and to make friends. And that's when I met my soon to be boss, and he offered me the job in LA at the Kings.
Roller hockey at the beach?
Oh yeah.
What had you ever seen that before?
No, I've never seen that before. I was renting some house on 7th and Montana and in Santa Monica, this beautiful area next to, all I remember is there was a Blockbuster next door, and I'm really dating myself, but, and I would rollerblade down to the beach. I think I had rollerblades from like, I don't know, we probably did summer training or something in Chicago. So I had rollerblades, and someone was saying like, yeah, just go down to the beach. They turn the trash cans over, literally turn the trash cans over with a, you know, an orange ball, and they just play. And I was like, yeah, I could do that. So that's how I met people.
Wow.
Yeah.
And it turned into an opportunity with the LA Kings, 3.5 years in LA, growing the department, the fan development department, department from the ground up. What was that like for you?
Yeah, I was, I learned a lot, right? Like it was my first time ever in a job.
Mm-hmm.
And it was one of those, like, so I met my boss to be Steve Bogievis, we call him Bogey. And he's like, hey, you want to, you know, you want to come just like help me out with things, you know, file papers, drive trucks, you know, clean out storage units and all mm-hmm. that. And I was like, yeah, sure, I'll do whatever. And I think he just saw that I was willing to do whatever I wanted to do it. And that turned into a full-time job. So, you know, assistant of fan development, working with him. And he was just like, you know, let's try to grow this together and figure it out. And he gave in what I, and he is, I'll talk about him because a lot, because he is, you know, he's kind of my mentor. Everyone needs someone mm-hmm. that you kind of look up to or that you remember. And he definitely, as a first boss, gave me a lot of those tools that today I use and that I didn't probably know that I had or that he was teaching me. You know, he never micromanaged me. He just allowed me to do things, make small mistakes to learn from. And, you know, and so I found a lot of value in that. And he allowed me to build. I was coming off, you know, we were coming off an Olympic gold medal. You know, I knew Cammy. She had just moved out to LA. And so, you know, I did a lot of women's clinics around Cammy Granato. And we were allowed to do a lot, you know, women's learn to plays and hockey 101s. And he was just allowing me to be creative in my space. And I think that really allowed me to grow and shine as a first timer and, you know, with a full time job.
Mm-hmm. From that point to now, seeing the growth of hockey in general in California, what is your opinion of how much it has grown?
Super impressed by it. You know, down in Anaheim, you know, LA, Anaheim, San Diego, the whole gamut of it, San Jose. I mean, the fact that the NHL is three teams mm-hmm. in California is super impressive and shows that there is huge growth in it. I mean, when I was, we were still at the Forum, like we were building the Staples Center, which is now what, Crypto?
Mm-hmm. Crypto.com.
Yeah. Crypto.com yep. Arena.
it is a little weird to say. I understand.
Yeah. So I'm just going to call it Staples Center, even though that's weird too. And so we were still in the very ground floor of like, what is hockey in Southern California? Like, I remember we would go to clinics with the like, well, what do we call it? The boards that, you know, like the squishy black portable boards. Mm-hmm. And we would drive this truck called the Chariot, and it was like a big equipment truck. And I was like, literally like hands on the big wheel, driving an equipment truck at 25. And we would go to these, you know, youth centers and YMCAs and parts of town, you know, that didn't know hockey. So it was extremely grassroots.
Mm-hmm.
We would set up a little rink with some, you know, the orange balls and the hockey sticks and just like teach kids hockey, like sticks and hands on the street and on the, you know, in the parking lot. And that's how we like got our brand and, you know, got the words out. So it was extremely grassroots, which again, I learned so much from, is like mm-hmm. teaching these children who never even picked up a hockey stick before. And I remember going into a certain area in Compton and we were teaching and, you know, and we had said, name one person on the Kings, and everyone's like, Kobe Bryant, you know, like they didn't know. No. There was all Lakers. Everything was Lakers. Yeah. So we would go in and everything was Lakers were winning at the time too. Like mm-hmm. they were having the parades and it wasn't very much hockey centric.
Mm-hmm.
And then to like leave, go to Chicago and to see how it has grown so much. You know, in all of Southern California with the Ducks winning the Stanley Cup and then the Kings winning the Stanley Cup. I mean, it's just like the growth of and having these players now come out of California mm-hmm. was so rare. Right. And now it's just like, yeah, players come from California, players come from Florida. So just to see the growth from the ground level all the way into the pro collegiate and pro level is really impressive.
And just a reminder that we have exciting news. Gettle is now the official HVAC partner of the Anaheim Ducks and the Honda Center. Keeping things cool on the ice and warm at home. Gettle, your trusted HVAC and plumbing partner. Visit Gettle.com/ducks for exclusive promotions. Goettl, we make comfort easy to spell. With your experience in California, how did that set the roots for your 14 years with the Chicago Blackhawks and growing hockey in the Chicagoland area?
Yeah, so I knew that I eventually needed to go back home. Yeah, and so left in 05 during the lockout. I left California and went back home to Chicago and didn't have any plans to get back into the NHL. Was wanting to do like real estate. My parents are in real estate. And so I was like, I just want to take a different path. I want to see what else is out there. you know, I want to try something new. And this job came across, you know, my desktop at the time. And it was like director of youth hockey, Chicago Blackhawks. And I was like, huh, that's interesting because they don't have a department. So like I get to build it again, similar to what I was doing here, but yeah. I get to build it. I was like, I'll just throw my name in the hat, you know? And then next thing I know, I'm, you know, I started there in 2008 and I like to say that I was a rookie the same year as Kane and Taves. So super important. So started there in 08 and I again had a mentor and a boss, Pete Hassan, that was like, here you go. Like blank sheet of paper, do what you need to do.
Wow.
And so I spent probably the first year not even in the office. Like I was just going out, you know, cups of coffee at every single youth hockey facility rink, like going back to some of my roots and some of the people that, you know, had taught me hockey, you know, when I was a kid and mm-hmm. just kind of repairing and repairing or bridging the gap back from the youth hockey community into the Blackhawks. As you know, the history of the Blackhawks is we didn't have the games on TV. So like there was no awareness of our players.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing that Rocky Wirtz did when he bought the team or took over the team, I'd say in October of 07 was let's put the games back on TV. So when I started in April of 08, it's like, okay, people are starting to see us again.
Mm-hmm.
And we're very Chicago Bears, you know, I mean, everything's yeah. about the Bears in Chicago. So
yep.
the Bears. So, my first like mission was like, let's get out in the community and get these youth hockey players back. Let's get these, you know, these hockey directors and people mm-hmm. in the rinks and, you know, one of the VPs, they're called them like our incubators. Like these are our people.
Mm-hmm.
These are our customers. Like why have we not allowed them to watch our game for this many years? So I would say the first year, that's what I did. And I just, you know, to me, relationships are very important. Building relationships is like one of my key, you know,
mm-hmm.
I guess, takeaways. Is like relationships are so important because you never know when you're going to meet someone again or need to call on someone again. And so that was like first and foremost for me was just building those. And then from there, we were able to create programs and, you know, use ambassadors like Eddie Olchek to create hockey camps and different things around programs that meant a lot for us, not only community based that meant a lot for us, but also drove revenue and, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, ticket sales and sponsorship and all that stuff always plays into a lot of the stuff that you build.
Getting to start to integrate girls hockey programs in Chicago, the place that, you know, you grew up, you learned how to play hockey. How special was that for you?
It was fun. I mean, it's like my husband always air quotes my job. You're going to work, you know, like this is not work. I was like, it is work. Like I'm working a lot of hours. He's like, I know, but you're doing it's your dream job. Like this is what you're doing. You're doing everything. Well, dream job until PWHL right. came about, which we'll talk about. But mm-hmm. anyway. He's like, you're working in hockey and you're working with kids. Like I always say my two favorite things are hockey and kids. Like, and so you mesh them together and it's perfect. So yeah, I mean, playing girls hockey, to see girls hockey now, like 20 mm-hmm. some years later after I left, like there's actually teams and AAA teams that play and there's girls teams and girls tournaments. And so it was a lot of, it was a good platform for me to build on of like, now, look what we can do. We can have girls hockey here and we can have tournaments and teams and women's events and all mm-hmm. this stuff. Whereas we were doing that in LA, but like to come to Chicago and now know that there's a platform to do it on, I think was special. And boys too, like just the fact that we could run hockey camps and we could do different events in the community was, it was mm-hmm. thrilling. Like I enjoyed the building phase of trying things. And if a program didn't work and we were like, oh, it's not going to work next year, then we, you know, took it off the table.
You talk about that building phase. When the PWHL idea came about, how did you get involved and where did that begin?
When the PWHL came about, well, I mean, so like rewind, because there was, you know, the CWHL mm-hmm. and there was the PHF and there was all the other leagues that were, you know, trying to be sustainable and had great players playing in them. So when I left the Blackhawks, we had hosted, so I think it was 2019 was our first year. We hosted the Dream Gap Tour, which mm-hmm. was you're familiar with.
I remember,
with it.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
The PWHPA, which was basically the players had put together a players association to play. It was mm-hmm. like 200 of the, you know, mostly Olympians, Kendall Coyne, Hillary Knight, all the Olympians put together this association and they went around. Oh, you guys hosted one as well. Yeah. Went around and to different NHL cities and, you know, cities in Canada to play hockey, play games. And so we hosted them in 2019. Billie Jean King was a huge, huge supporter and advocate of it. Mm-hmm. So she, that was my first time meeting her, which was really exciting. So we hosted them in 2019. Kendall Coyne is a Chicago native, as you know, and ambassador for the Blackhawks. I actually hired her when I was with the Blackhawks to do a lot of our like women's programming and stuff. We coined a program after her, Golden Coins, after she came home with her gold medal in 2018. So moving into 2019 and having this Dream Gap tour, hosting the best, sorry, I just hit the mic, hosting the best women.
All good.
Hosting the best women's hockey players in the world to play hockey. We had just built a new Blackhawks community ice center training facility. So I think that's how I kind of got to know the big names and the players in the women's space. So she introduced me to Jaina Hefford, who is a five-time Canadian Olympic medalist. If you don't know who she is, then, you know, look her up, but everyone should know Jaina. So, Jaina had been helping the PWHPA. And so I'd gotten to know her as well and, hosted another event there in 2020, right in the middle of COVID, but it was actually live on NBC, which was super exciting. And might've hosted one more event after that, maybe in 2021. But so really started to amplify the women. Again, had Kendall and Alex Cavallini, Alex Rigsby Cavallini, another local Olympian, like had them out at a Blackhawks game in 2018 when they won. So really just like amplifying the space around women's hockey and knowing that, you know, that they need somewhere to go. So then I left the Blackhawks in July of 22 and was still trying to, you know, doing consulting and things and trying to figure out what was next. Always knew I'd contacted Jaina and said, you know, if this is ever going to launch, like, please keep me in mind. And it was funny. And then when she called me, I had just taken a job with another mentor of mine in kind of the operations space. And she called me and was like, hey, what are you doing? And I'm like, well, nothing. I didn't just take a job. I'm doing nothing. What do you need? And so that's how it, so July of 23 was like, okay, I think, you know, this is going to happen. The PHF was just acquired by Mark Walter Group. And, you know, we're going to move forward with this new league. And, you know, do you want to be a part of it? It's, again, it's a build like I did in LA and I did in Chicago. So like, do you want to be a part of this? And I was like, yeah, sign me up. I don't even care what you're paying me or where I'm supposed to move to. Like I'm in. So that's how it started.
Where does the entrepreneurial spirit come from for you?
That's funny. I've never been asked that before. I don't know. Is it entrepreneurial or is it just like, I just like,
you're
to like
a go-getter.
Figure it out.
You're a go-getter too. I feel like, do you?
Yeah.
It's just who you are.
Yeah. I mean, maybe I've never thought about it that way. That's a good way of putting it. I think I just enjoy, if I'm in the right space, right? And it's things that I love to do. You know, I work hard. My daughter will know I'm usually always in front of my computer or on the phone doing something, but it's always something that I love. And again, I love relationship building. So I love, you know, I can always be on the phone or talking to people or meeting new people is a big part of probably being an entrepreneur. Like you have to just, the other thing is figure it out. Like we always say now in our, on our calls, like you just have to figure it out. Like I learned more about skate sharpeners than I'll probably ever need to know or ever did know. But like I learned everything you need to know about a skate sharpener now. You ask me one question, I know what a Tommy bar is. Okay. But like before, would I ever thought that I needed to learn about skate sharpeners? No. But like you just do it, you figure it out. So Jaina built an incredible team. There's five of us on it. And she knew the right people, I think, to bring in, to her credit, that all had different skill sets. So all of us are so different. We complement each other so well and we collaborate so well. And everyone's just, they just help, right? If they know you're overwhelmed or stressed out, they'll give you a call and say, what can I take off your plate? Even though they have a million things on their plate. So it's just, I'm super proud to be a part of this build.
Since January 1, it's been truly amazing to see everything the PWHL has done. I mean, breaking attendance records all over. What have been some of the more challenging things that you guys have faced so far and just learned from?
Time. Time was not on our side when we did this. And I think everybody told us not to do it. January 1 of 24. They're like, you're launching. This was in August, right? Mm-hmm. That we announced it. And they say, you're launching a league in 2024. Great. So like at the end of 24, and we're like, nope, January 1st. And they're like, no way. Like everyone was telling us, don't do it. Do it next season. Do it next season, you know? And we owed this to the players. The players had been waiting long enough. Mm-hmm. This was one of the first women's leagues, maybe even the first one that had signed a collective bargaining agreement before the league had even taken off. Mm. So they did all this work before January 1st to build the league, provide a safe space for these players to play by creating this collective bargaining agreement, putting all the rules in place for us to launch. Like, we owed it to them to drop that puck on January 1st.
As far as where your role is on a day to day, what are some of the duties that you're in charge of, just for listeners to understand more about your role?
Yeah, we all kind of do everything. no one needed a job description because it was just like, let's just do it and figure it out. That's our job description. when I started, a lot of it was taking on the role. We had to have a draft, right? So we launched in August. I remember, I think it was the end of August. Jaina's like, let's meet in Toronto for a couple of days, put our heads down and just like work. So there were, you know, five of us sitting at a table in Toronto, and we're like, yeah, we should have a draft. When are we going to do the draft? Let's do draft in September. Okay. So we went and like looked at a couple spaces in Toronto. And I remember we walked into the space where we held it and in CBC and said, yeah, this looks good. Yeah, I think we could do it here. And this was like 3 weeks before we actually held the draft.
Wow.
And then one of my coworkers, Burton Lee, who's amazing, was like, okay, I'll help. Like, he raised his hand and he put that draft together in 3 weeks. And you guys saw it. I mean, mm-hmm. it was Billie Jean King was there, and like it was amazing. It mm-hmm. was jaw dropping what we built in 3 weeks. Credit to mostly Burton and the team, but what was built in 3 weeks. A lot of people on the business team too, you know, from our marketing team and business operations side. Like, we just sponsorship, like we had a title sponsor for it. So like, figuring it out is just what we did. So what, if you ask me what we did in when we started, everything, like we just had to figure it out and had to do it. And then from that, and the teams were placed, right? We announced our six markets and the teams were placed. We had to get these players into market before January 1. Mm-hmm. So November 15th was the first day of training camp. We purposely did a longer training camp in year one, 6 week training camp, to try to, you know, get the kinks out and build the team and allow the general managers time to build their team. And so I'd say a lot of what I was doing from probably September to November 15th, when the first day the players walked into market, again, it's always in our forefront. Like, this is a player first league. We want them to be treated like professionals. You don't get a second chance for them to walk into the locker room for the very first time of this pro league. And, you know, Sarah Nurse or Kendall Coyne or Hillary Knight to say, wow. Mm-hmm. And it was always my vision, always in my head. It was like, I want them to feel like they are professional, knowing that things might be left behind, like not left behind, but like things might be delayed. Mm-hmm. You know, it might be shipments that are still coming in and stuff, but knowing that they know, hey, we're building this for you. And as long as they know, like, hey, your locker room is coming or this is coming, then they can have that in their understanding. And luckily, they're all just amazing people that they understood, and they're kind of doing it with us. So I'd say, yeah, I was literally ordering skate sharpeners, trying to figure out customs, how to ship, you know, three skate sharpeners to Canada and the other three to the U.S. and, you know, getting tape and getting, I mean, you don't realize when you're starting a hockey team, like, you need everything. Mm-hmm.
Six hockey teams.
Six hockey teams. So how are we going to do it? And luckily, we have an unbelievable owner in Mark Walter and his wife, Kimbra, you know, an amazing committee with Billie Jean King and Alana Kloss and Stan Kasten from the Dodgers. I mean, we have these powerhouse people that come with revenue and capital and reputation and sports knowledge. So they knew what it took. So without those resources, this wouldn't have happened. Mm-hmm.
As far as a visibility standpoint, just having the games televised as well on these bigger market TV networks, how important has that been for the PWHL?
I mean, Billie Jean King says it best, if you can see it, you can be it, right? Mm-hmm. So without having these on TV, you know, we're selling out arenas. Toronto has their capacity is a little bit smaller than some of our other arenas, but before Jan 1, they were sold out, but that's only houses that many people in that facility, right? So how do you get our brand out and let others see it? Maybe you don't live in Toronto, you can't get a ticket to the game, but you still want to watch it on TV. So allowing us to have all of our games televised on YouTube. That's how we watch all of our games, is on YouTube, because I'm out of market. Mm-hmm. In Minnesota, they have Bally Sports. So, you know, Lot Rogers and RDS and all these others in Toronto, New York picked up some games on MSG Network. So, you know, and NESN in Boston. So, yeah, I mean, just for these broadcasters to jump on and to allow the women's game to be seen on TV, so you can turn it on and watch the game just like you can every other sport. I mean, that's what professional sports is.
Annie, what is ahead for the PWHL? What anything that you're excited about or you're looking forward to with the rest of the season?
Playoffs.
Of course, yes.
Figuring out the trophy. What are we going to name the trophy?
Oh, right. That's important.
What's it going to look like? What are we calling the playoffs? What are the championships called? I mean, this is all like, we need to figure this out now. And we have an amazing business ops team too, with led by Amy Shear, who comes from a wealth of knowledge in both the women's and men's pro space. So, you know, figuring out what that looks like, where mm-hmm. are playoff games going to be? So we're on a call later today about, you know, playoff venues. And the other really unique thing about our league is the jailbreak rule, which I don't know if you've heard of that, but because we can be innovative and because we're new, we can try new things. So one of it is the jailbreak rule. And I know I'm segueing here a little bit, but there's a reason for it. the jailbreak is where if you score on a shorthanded goal, on a power play, you're shorthanded, you score a goal, your player comes out of the box.
Mm.
And so that's called the jailbreak. We didn't coin it. I think a fan might have said that. Hmm. And now it's called the jailbreak rule. So we're just a lot, and fans love it. Mm-hmm. So just trying new things, being innovative. So going into playoffs, we have another innovative or different idea, I guess, or different play on playoffs. So there's six total teams in our league. The top four make playoffs. So mm-hmm. instead of just the traditional one plays four, two plays three, one and two are the home teams, but the first seeded team gets to pick their opponent between three and four. So based on how they played in during the season, maybe based on travel, whatever it may be, they get to pick either three or four. So that's innovative. That's new. So looking forward to that, like who's mm-hmm. the first place seed going to pick, and is yeah. it going to have this type of rivalry to it? So yeah, I mean, we're always trying new things. We have some great commercial partners that are giving us opportunities to try new things. Molson just came out with See My Name. So on International Women's Day, Toronto and Montreal wore jerseys where the names were on the bottom of the number, mm-hmm. not at the top. So, you know, in case you have a long ponytail. So, you know, all this stuff we're looking forward to. We're always looking to innovate and to try new things into year two. So what are we looking forward to moving forward? I would say like a million, like I could
there's so
give
many
you a
things.
List of a million things that we're looking forward to. And it's always a new day and it's super fun and exciting.
I really thought the jersey idea was very unique and very smart too. Just having, I mean, I have long hair. I understand the struggle of a ponytail covering my name back when I was an athlete too. I thought that was really a creative idea.
I did too. And I wonder if it's going to be adopted into mm-hmm. year two. Yeah.
Annie, as far as being here for our Women in Sports weekend, what are you looking forward to about this weekend? Just getting to be on the panel on Sunday and meeting some other incredible women in the industry.
Yeah, we had a call with them yesterday. So super excited to meet some of them. We don't know a lot about them. So, you know, reading up on all of them and their incredible bios and their incredible, you know, the way that they've built and they've become builders in their space and really changed the perception of women's sports and allowed opportunities for other women. I just, again, to meet people and to connect with them and hopefully get some autographs of my own of the people that are signing on the concourse. So really excited, really honored to be here, really appreciative of Brett Kurtz and the team for inviting me and allowing me to come back out to California and visit everybody, but mostly just to talk about my journey, to talk about the PWHL and to meet some pretty incredible women.
And how special to have your daughter here too.
I know.
To get to see and be a part of it with you.
Yeah, I'll say this a little anecdote here. When we so she started playing hockey learned to play programs that mm-hmm. we did when I was at the Blackhawks, and I would coach her. And you know, she always wanted me to be on the ice with her. She wanted me to be the coach. And eventually I was like, you know what? I need you to have other coaches, not your mom. And she was like, I don't know. So we tried hockey. she did great. She's a great skater, but then took her own path. And now she's an elite soccer and basketball player. So that's what she does. But, and she's been doing that for years now, years. I mean, she's 12, but what made me most proud, I think, as a mom is when, my husband and daughter came up to the January 1st puck drop in Toronto. And it was literally like, everything leading up to that was like puck drop and Jan 1, puck drop. That's what we would just say in all our meetings, like till puck drop. And then when the puck literally dropped, like it was like waterworks. So anyway, Amelia and my husband, Mike, were there. And I remember after the game, she came up to me and she goes, "Mom, I want to play hockey now."
Oh.
And I was like, "We don't have any time." But but like that to me was like such a mom moment, like a proud moment. Like, wow, I'm like, she's like, I'm doing this. Like she's seeing it, what I'm doing. And like to the fact that she came up to me and was like, I want to skate again.
Mm-hmm. That's so special. Do you get to go out on the ice much still?
So not as much as I want.
Okay.
But I need two more, and I brought my skates, and I was just talking to Celeste right before this, and I was like, could I like whirl around the ice rink somewhere before the clinic tomorrow that I'm doing? Cause you know, and Brett's like, don't embarrass me. Like, don't fall on your face. And I was like, oh gosh, I might need like a practice lap. So I don't know if there's any ice laying around here somewhere, but
oh, we've got a lot of ice here.
Yeah. So I might need to do that. So, yeah, super excited to get back out there, but no, not as much as I'd like to. That's for sure.
Well, Annie, this has been so awesome having you on Light the Lamp. We're super excited to have you here this weekend. And best of luck with the rest of the PWHL season.
Well, I appreciate you allowing me to tell my story and talk about the PW, and lovely meeting you and everybody here.
Thank you. And get your home cozy with Gettle Rejuvenation for just $129. We'll prep your HVAC for the season so you're ready to cheer on our Ducks. Call 866-671-9822 or visit Gettle.com/Ducks. G-O-E-T-T-L. We make comfort easy to spell.
This is an Anaheim Ducks original production on Duckstream.